Hi, listeners, and welcome to my second episode of Inside Entertainment Industry Careers, a show that gives you personal insights into a variety of career roles in the creative industries. I'm your host, Emily Maguire, talent manager at Reflections Talent Agency and career and business coach for the creative and entertainment industries at Reflections Career Coaching. My second guest is Vicky Voller, who shares her career journey in the world of hair, makeup and prosthetics. Vicky began her career as a hairdresser in London and then the BBC, and then she worked on the medical drama Holby City before moving on and starting her own company as a makeup designer for film and television. Vicky has used her skills on exciting productions such as No Time to Die with Daniel Craig, Hijack with Idris Elba, Man vs. Bee with Rowan Atkinson, and the Game of Thrones spin-off House of the Dragon. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this interview with the fantastic Vicky Voller as she gives insights into her career journey, how she started out in the world of hair and makeup, and shares insights for those of our listeners who are considering a career in this industry sector. Hi, Vicky. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you, Emily, for inviting me. It's lovely to be here.
So you're going to talk about the world of hair, makeup and prosthetics.
Yes, I am, which has been my career since I was 24.
Did you always know that you wanted to work in hair and makeup, or was there like one moment when you thought, yes, this is the career for me?
I actually wasn't aware that you could make a career out of being a makeup artist. I mean, when I call it a makeup artist, I mean hair, makeup and prosthetics. And I always wanted to paint, and I sort of had this feeling that I would live in Paris and paint in a studio. Very romantic, I know. Yeah. And my mum had a neighbour who worked at the BBC, who was a vision mixer, and she said to me, would I like to come up for the day and just see what it would be like to be a makeup artist? So I went up, not really thinking much about it. I went up to Shepherd's Bush Theatre and saw Are You Being Served? And I was absolutely transformed into wanting to be a makeup artist. I'd never seen a wig put on to look like a real wig. And I'd never seen a man transformed from looking like he normally looks when he walks into the makeup room and then walking out and being a complete character and then playing that character. And I just was sold. And I not only wanted to be a makeup artist, I actually wanted to be a makeup artist at the BBC, funnily enough. And so that was what I always told everybody I wanted to do. And when they said to me, what would be your second choice? I always said, there is no second choice. That's what I want to do.
A very clear vision in terms of what you wanted to do as a career.
Yeah, very clear. There was no sort of thinking about what's plan B. I always wanted to do that, and that was all I would ever say I wanted to be.
So how did you decide on the training routes and the courses that you took?
It was very different in my day. I was incredibly lucky because the BBC had a two-year training course. Every 2 years, they would put out there that they were looking for people to train, and you would fill in a form and hopefully get an interview. The year that I got in, there was 4,000 applicants. I'm sure there'd be more nowadays. And 12 people got in. So I was very, very lucky. But 2 years before that, I got an interview, but I didn't get in. They failed me. And they failed me on hair. Now, hair is such an important part of being a makeup artist. And I wasn't aware of it at all. I just wanted to paint faces. So I went and did a three-month training hair and barbering course, and then I worked in a hairdress for the rest of the 2 years and applied to the BBC and got in again. Nowadays it's different because all over the country there are different makeup academies, and when I say makeup, they do barbering, they do hair, they do prosthetics, so they all come under one umbrella. And you can choose which length of course you'd like to do, because some people come from being a hairdresser and then want to come into the film industry. So you can do a year course, or you can go to like LCF, you can do 2 year course, or you go to these private academies and you can choose between 6 months, 9 months and a year, depending on where your starting point is, really.
So there's lots of different routes available now for everybody, really.
Yes, and there's lots of barbering courses that you can do, or you can just do period hair. You know, you can go into theatre. There's so many avenues now, which wasn't the case when I join the BBC. So I think everyone's very lucky now. But unfortunately, the private academies, you need to save up or get a grant for.
And you just touched upon theatre there. Is there a great difference between theatre and TV?
Yes, there is. I mean, theatre's live, and I think it takes a different type of person who wants to go and work in the evening, whereas evenings have never really appealed to me. I've always wanted to be at home and rest in the evenings. And go in and do a live show night after night, and probably a matinee day as well, where you do two shows. Mm. And I think it's a different kind of person. But nowadays, there's a lot of men and women coming from theatre, hair and makeup, and coming into the industry. You can tell when somebody's done theatre because they're very disciplined, because obviously it's a live show. It's a bit like you can always tell when somebody's done ballet, very strict with their hair and very strict with a few things. And I find that theatre people are like that as well. And that's a good thing. That's not a bad thing.
It sounds a little bit as well like, in terms of actors and lines, when you do theatre work as an actor, you've got to know those lines. There's no break or kind of going cut and restarting.
Yes, and you know, if a wig's going to come off, you don't want it coming off on a live show. You want it coming off on something where you can cut and go again. So I think that's where that strict discipline comes from.
No, that's interesting to hear about the difference between the two mediums. So what's been your most favourite project that you've worked on so far?
Oh, gosh, that's a tricky one. I think the reason why most people become makeup artists is because of the variety. And no 2 days are ever the same. And so I don't think I really have a favourite. Mm. I would probably say that my most challenging job that I've ever done would be Horrible Histories. Okay. And I went back and did 3 years of that. So it was so challenging. You had to do everything with nothing, and you had no money, and you had no time. And there's an amazing gratification and satisfaction in achieving that, even at the end of every single day. So, you know, you'd begin the day and you'd go, I don't think I can achieve today. And then you get to the end of the day and you'd achieved it. And you go home, you get up, and you come in and think the same again the next day. So I think that was probably stands out for me because it was the most challenging. Also, I think probably the most exciting job I've ever done was I was personal to Rowan Atkinson on Johnny English.
Okay.
And when I got that job, I was very excited and very excited to be a part of the process and the look and the visual story, because Rowan's so visual and, you know, he can do Mr. Bean and there's no words. So, and I loved being a part of that process. So that was quite exciting for me. I really enjoyed that job. You know, just doing things like on Johnny English 3, when he has a fire extinguisher all over his face, he has the foam. and so I used egg whites because I didn't want him to get the foam in his eyes, because you're not meant to point a fire extinguisher at somebody's face, especially not the leading man. So there's lots of things that the viewer doesn't see, but they all need to be thought about and carefully executed so that we can carry on and use him after that scene, really.
So that's egg whites then for the foam. That's interesting. Is there any other mediums which are kind of similar to that?
I think all the time you're thinking, because you've got to look after your actors. So when you're doing silly things that are meant to look funny, obviously you have to be safe, and everything that you put on an actor's face has to be for the face. And you know, you don't want somebody swallowing something that they shouldn't be ingesting, and you don't want anything near their eyes. You don't want anything on their skin that might actually have a reaction. So that's all part of the challenge each day, I think.
And you've worked on House of Dragon as well. That's such a popular show. What was that like?
It's amazing to work on. I would say that House of the Dragon would be my favourite show for variety and for all the people that work on it. You can be doing 1 minute, you can be doing beautiful hair women can sit on and it's beautifully braided and crimped. And then the next person that sits in your chair could be an undead person, or the next person that sits down could have part half prosthetics, half makeup, and then the next person that sits down could just be your run-of-the-mill dirting down. And sometimes with the white wigs, we'd be putting on half ball caps underneath because of the dark hair showing through. So the variety that you have on House of the Dragon is so lovely to work on, it because every day is different, which is what I love about the job.
It's such a visual masterpiece as well, isn't it, to watch?
Yes, absolutely. And you work as such a team. I've never worked on main team, which is Amanda Knight. I've always worked in crowd, which has been Sarah Kramer. And Sarah runs probably one of the best crowd teams, and everybody is challenged, but you're not over challenged. So she'll give the work to the people that want it or are asking for it. And so you can only but learn on that job and only come away as a better makeup artist.
Do you feel then, when you just touched upon that as well, to do with like you're always learning, do you think regardless of how many years in the industry that you've had, you're just continually learning?
Yes, I do. And I think that you can, I kind of sometimes think that I learn something new every day. Maybe I don't, but sometimes people are talking about how they've done something and you're listening and you wouldn't have done it like that. And it's interesting because we all get to the end, but because we're artists, we all do it differently. And I kind of think that's why a lot of people do it, because you're allowed to put your own interpretation onto a hair or makeup look. Obviously, you're given a fitting sheet and that's how it needs to look when you finished. However, how you get there is kind of your challenge, which is lovely. And also, for me, it's also about the people that I work with, because I've worked on jobs where there hasn't been a makeup and a hair challenge or a prosthetic challenge, but I look back on them really, really fondly. I only Fools and Horses I loved, and every time I see Nicholas Lyndhurst or David Jason in something, I think, oh, what's this? Do I need to watch it? And I worked on Friday Night Dinner, and we used to have such a nice time on that. We worked from 10 in the morning until 10 at night, because the exteriors were always outside because it was always Friday night. So we would work in a blacked out house during the day, and then as soon as it got dark, we'd go outside and shoot the exteriors. So it was a kind of a weird environment that we were working in, but it was so much fun because we were all trapped in the blacked out house together and then out in the freezing cold together. So it was the team that I think it's also the people that you're working with and the team you're working with are probably just as important as the work you're doing.
So that's a really good skill to have then, the team working skill.
Yes, definitely. And I would say that when I've interviewed people to work with me, it's interesting because 60% for me is their personality and that they're going to work as a team and that we're going to get on and there's not going to be an atmosphere. And you could be incredibly talented, but I think if you don't have that team skill, you probably won't achieve as much as you'd like to.
That's interesting. It's a good tip for our listeners as well, in terms of just be yourself when you're there as well interviewing.
Yes, definitely. And also for these that are interviewed and they've been to an academy or they've been to college or uni to learn what they need to learn to then go and have an interview, and somebody says, as I always do, they say, bring your portfolio along. And they sit there and I turn the first page and they say, now this isn't very good, or this isn't my best work, this, but actually it's not about what's in the book. It's actually giving me a place to talk to them and say to them, what did you make this out of? Why did you make it like that? And it's actually a way of talking to them. And you can see from something that you can see loads of edges on, or hair lace or something, you can still see whether they're able to do it. Because when you're learning, obviously, if it's perfect, why are you in an academy learning?
True. No, that's lovely. That's a nice tip for our listeners. Thank you. So before I move on to another question, I have to ask, you worked on the James Bond movie, didn't you?
Yes, I did.
I have to ask this question. How was it working with Daniel Craig?
Well, Daniel Craig had his own makeup artist, own personal makeup and hair artist, both of who I know, who are both lovely. I didn't speak to Daniel Craig when I was working on it. I was on main team, but I was doing Daniel Craig doubles. Well, I should say Bond doubles. So I was doing stunt doubles that looked like him. But no, I never spoke to Daniel Craig, but everybody says that he's absolutely lovely. And he seemed very, very nice on set as well. That was another dream come true, really. I grew up watching James Bond with my my brother and my dad. So to work on that job was lovely.
So which was your favourite Bond? Mine has to be Pierce Brosnan.
I have to say Daniel Craig, don't I?
So you've worked on modern and period dramas, haven't you? You've worked on a range of different projects. How do you find the inspiration and plan for these projects that you work upon?
I think it's important for everybody to work together to come up with a look. So I think it's very much a team amalgamation of each department coming together. And you start off and you normally have a meeting with the director, and he'll kind of tell you how he feels about the job and how he feels he'd like it to look. And then each department come together, and then of course you have the set designer, and then they'll probably bring the colours and the tone of how the director or the writer or the showrunner or producers would like it to look. And you come up with your ideas as well. And I always like to do a mood board, because I find that when I'm talking about makeup to someone that doesn't do makeup, sometimes it's difficult for them to visualize it. So I always think a mood board looks great, because they can just point at it and go, I like these colors, I like this look, I like this shape hair, I don't like that, and I wouldn't want that. And then you can slowly but surely get an idea of how everyone would like it to look. And then for me, it's very much about costume. So you need to get on with your costume department, and the costume designer will sit down and they'll say, this is what I'd like to do. And obviously, the costume and the hair and makeup got to work together. So if somebody's meant to have street cred, costume's got street cred, then the hair and makeup have to as well. So we kind of discuss the look. And we'll then have fittings where an artist or an actor, actress will have a costume fitting and a makeup fitting. And more often than not, they'll come to you in their costume, and then you'll do their hair and makeup and maybe a couple of styles. And then they'll go back to costume, and we'll get a look with both of them together. And then that will go forward to directors, producers, to see which they prefer or what they like or what they don't like. So it's very much a coming together of all departments to bring something to the screen that we're all happy with.
Again, that teamwork again, like you said, and that communication. When you say a mood board, do you still do work with the board and sort of stick things on, or have you gone digital? Or
it's a bit of both, to be honest with you. I meant to be paperless, and we often now aren't sent scripts, aren't sent call sheets, and they all come through on your email, and then you read them off there. We try not to print anything. But if I'm working with somebody who is very happy to have a mood board that's all been digitally done, I'll send it through. But I'm a bit old-fashioned. I still quite like a bit of paper if I can.
I like that tactileness as well of all the different colours and feelings.
I do, and I like to write my notes on it. I know you can do that on your iPad now, but I like to highlight things. And I think it's just because we're visual people. So I like to sort of colour everything in. I quite like to draw things. And I'm still not letting go of those final pieces of paper.
Totally get that. I'm very much the same. And when you kind of work with the prosthetics as well, you do a range of things, don't you? I've seen that you've done from like the wounds, which look amazing, all the way up to like the pregnancy bumps.
I've made a good living out of pregnant stomach. Such a visual. I specialise in medical prosthetics. And worked on Holby City for 11 years. I actually set it up and set up the prosthetic department. And I like a prosthetic to look real. I like the viewer to look at it and believe that person's pregnant, and believe that somebody's cutting an umbilical cord, and believe that somebody's stitching a wound that's bleeding. As soon as we move into monsters and things, the creatures that aren't real, it's not my thing. I just like the magic of pretending that that's what you're really seeing when you're not. It's makeup or prosthetics.
So when you look back over your career, did anybody give you a piece of advice that's stuck with you throughout?
I think when I first started working on Holby, we used to have medical advisors, and I can remember this one day, and we were in theatre, and we were operating on a heart, and the line was hysterical, because the line that when you saw the prosthetic was, "He's back." So they were operating on this man, and his heart stops beating, and there's spurting blood all over the place, and then they go, "He's back," and then you cut to the heart, and it's not beating, and then it goes, ba-bum, ba-bum. And it was right in the early days of Holby when I was really struggling. I'd done lots of facial prosthetics, and when I started Holby, suddenly I was doing whole bodies, and it was a massive challenge for me. And we did the rehearsal before we went for the take, and the actor who was playing the surgeon cut through the heart and cut through the little air bladders that I had at the back that made it go ba-bum, ba-bum, and gave you the visual. And so we went for a take, and they went, "He's back." And you look down at the heart, and nothing happens, because I was blowing the air into the heart. And of course, the bladder was burst. Yeah. And I can remember running out of the room, really upset, and standing in the corridor crying. And this cardiothoracic advisor, Sham, he came up to me and he said, "What's the matter with you?" And I said, "I'm really upset," and he yakety yak like this. And he went, "You do know you're not saving lives, don't you?" "I save lives." And after that, I realised that whatever happens, you just have to be calm. You have to let it go. You have to be flexible at all times, and you have to stay calm. And that all the worrying in the world the night before or on the day, you're going to work, you'll film it, and you'll come home. And he's right, you're not saving lives. You are entertaining people that can't get out, or you are entertaining people that want to watch what you're working on, but you're not saving lives.
So basically expect anything can happen on set.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's nice that person came out and said that to you and gave you those words of wisdom that's carried through with you. So talking about wisdom then as well, I mean, you've worked for, was it 12, 13 years that you worked in Holby City, wasn't it? And then you've had all the career afterwards as well. When you kind of look back upon the long career that you've had, is there any sort of advice that you can give to people starting out in hair and makeup that could help them with their careers?
I think if you go into working in hair and makeup in the film industry, and even more so if you specialise in prosthetics, I think you have to be so hungry for it, and you need to really, really want to do it. Last week, I was working on one of the jobs that we've discussed, and the first makeup was, I had to be in for 4:20 in the morning. So I got up at 3 and left at 3:30, and I worked until we wrapped, and we finished at 5:45. I finished work at 5:45, just in time to sit for an hour in the rush hour traffic, because that was just starting, to get home at 6. So I left the house for 14 and a half hours, and I think you have to be dedicated to do that. And I have to say that was a really long day for me. I loved every minute of it. It was great. It was great to be back on that job, and it was great to see everybody and have the fantastic work that we were doing. I feel that I'm very privileged to get paid to do what I do, but I think you have to be dedicated. You can't just think, "Oh, I might want to do that." I think you have to be hungry for it. You've got to juggle relationships and family. And at the same time, you've got to go into work and be the best that you can. And I'm very strict with myself as well when I work. I make sure that I have a good diet, lots of protein, and that I sleep well, and that I drink lots of fluids. And I think that if you have any doubt in your mind that it might not be the career for you, maybe it's not. And it's tough as well. There's a lot of makeup artists out there. So it is competitive.
if somebody wants to get some work experience and just sort of test the waters and see if the career is for them, do you have any advice?
There are people that do take on work experience, and I get quite a few CVs of people that are quite happy to come and work for free. We have to be very careful in the industry not to exploit people. So where I teach, when I've worked on jobs and I have been able to take people on work experience, I've taken the people that I've taught, but they've already committed, which means that they've made a financial commitment. And I think it is very, very hard to get onto a film set. You know, as soon as you walk onto a film set, you have to be insured. To be insured, more often than not, you need to have a contract, which means that you have to be working. On YouTube, there's a lot of footage of behind the scenes, and maybe that would be a way forward to have a look and see. And then the other thing is to do what everybody does in the industry, and that is to just pester people. If you know somebody or you have a contact or you think there's any way in, a bit like the vision mixer that took me up to the BBC, if you know somebody, it's who you know, you might be able to just squeeze in for a few hours and go and have a look at something.
And just quickly as well, just lastly, you also teach, don't you? How can people actually come and learn from you?
I actually only work at one academy now, which is called Delamar. And the reason why I really like teaching there is because the students are all interviewed before they have a chance to join, and obviously pay before they have a chance to pay. But also they're interviewed to make sure that they are the right people, and if they're not, they're advised, or you know, you're not just taken on because you pay your money. And also every single tutor that works at the academy, and this isn't just at this academy, it's at other academies as well, but if you are looking at learning, you need to make sure that everyone that teaches where you're looking at actually works in the industry, so that you're really up to date. You haven't wasted your money on buying a kit that's obsolete or buying things that people aren't using, because like any industry, different techniques evolve and things change. So it's important. And also the people that are teaching you are actually maybe your future employers. I taught people and then I've gone, oh gosh, they're good. And then when I've needed a trainee, I've asked them to come and work with me. So that's kind of important for them to realise that if they do join and start learning at a makeup academy early, that I'm not actually a teacher. Don't treat me like a teacher when you were at school. I'm a lecturer and I'm probably your future employment. So that's important for them to shift. They do want to go into the career and go and learn at an academy.
So again, there's this team working, but as well, there's that visibility and networking as well.
Yes, definitely. And also, you know, I might teach somebody. Last week I was teaching ball caps. So I taught a class how to put a ball cap on and then some advanced casualty. But on my next job, if I've got a load of wigs and I need somebody that's really good at wigs, I may ask the academy if they could tell me who they've got that's really good at wigs. Because I know all the tutors there. So that would be probably where I would go if I was looking for a trainee.
That's interesting. There's so much information that we've covered over the last 30 minutes. And I think our listeners are going to walk away with lots of insightful information. So thank you so much, Vicky.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, Emily.
Thank you for listening to this Inside Entertainment Industry Careers podcast. Make sure to subscribe for an email notification of when the next podcast episode goes live in 2 weeks' time. If you enjoyed this episode, please share with your friends, family, and network, and leave us some feedback.